more relaxed.
Hello and welcome to Drunk on Comics once again. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and all other things nerdy. My name is Derek. With me once again is my faithful friend in this nerd world, Tony. What's going on, Tone?
Not a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah. Well, we are back to our normal scheduled podcast. We took a week off last week, had some things come up, but we did have the super special bullshit edition. Hope you enjoyed that one. But we are going to get back into things just as normal. Just a little warning. We are talking about comic books that are new this week. Talking about at least one comic that was new in 1997 as well. But if you don't like spoilers and you're worried about hearing them, pause us now, go read your books, come back and listen to us after you've got that all done. So we're going to get it started off and get into our segment that we call Off the Shelf, which today is going to take up the vast majority of our time. I've actually got a few more books than normal to talk about. I'm going to kick it off, and I want to talk first about the new Captain Marvel number one. It's written by Kelly Sue DeConnick. Art was by Dexter Soy, and the issue I got was the 1 in 25 variant with the cover from 80 Granov. A little background on this. Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Ms. Marvel, she never really seemed to catch on too well as a major character, it seems. Even since her debut back in 1977, she's always been there, but she's never been one of the big names in Marvel. If you don't know really a whole lot about her, she got her powers actually from an accident when Captain Marvel saved her. There was an explosion and some of his genetic structure grafted to her own.
Did she get married to him? Is that why she...
No, no.
Same last name?
Well, it may have been a civil union. I'm not sure, but when you have genetic structure grafted to you, I think you might have to take the name, you know. I'm not really sure, though. But see, now, his technically, though, she'd be Ms. Marvel-Vell, because his name was Mar-Vell.
Oh,
because it's clever.
Yeah.
So, throughout time, she's had, you know, a few other names, actually. I mean, she's been known as Binary, she's been known as Warbird, and she's now taken the name of Captain Marvel. This whole book itself was basically about Carol taking on the mantle of Captain Marvel, something that she really didn't feel that strongly about. Tony, you did read this book, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Good. I'm gonna definitely want to chat with you about this one. The book starts out with her and Captain Marvel, or I'm sorry, Ms. Marvel and Captain America fighting the Absorbing Man. And it's a really nice intro, just in general, for the character. So people that maybe aren't familiar with her, I think it's kind of nice that they've got her in there with Cap. There's some familiarity there. There's another cameo later on in the book from Spider-Man, which I thought was kind of nice. That, you know, kind of gives a little bit of personality to Carol Danvers if you don't know her. Also shows that she is familiar in the Marvel Universe. And so I think a lot of what they did in this book, besides her just taking on the name of Captain Marvel, is they sort of give some personal background on her, and it seems like they're setting up the first major story arc for what I'm assuming is probably going to be the next few issues. So, this book, a few little points I want to point out. This book, as an individual book, is honestly the best single issue that I have read in ages. I didn't know what to expect from this book, and all I'd seen was the main cover, which I believe that the main cover was an Ed McGuinness cover. That's all I'd seen so far up to this point. You know, just saying that it's coming out, I'm like, okay, I'm interested to see. I've never seen Dexter Soy's work previous to this, and when I opened up that first story page, I literally gasped. It's some of the most insane art I've seen. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, Tony, you want to help? I mean, can you even describe this for people that haven't seen it?
No, it's definitely need to pick it up for the art alone, besides the storyline. I know when you were first telling me that you picked it up the day before I did, I was kind of hesitant on, do I need to start picking up a new title? Derek said the storyline was good. I was like, well, I can just hear the storyline, but he said just the art's phenomenal. You can't just hear art. You need to see art. And they did a pretty damn good job drawing this.
There's just so much. I mean, The coloring and the shading in this is fantastic. I mean, I've never seen art quite like this in a comic book before. But there are a lot of fun little things, too, that Soy added in here. I mean, in the beginning, on the first double-page splash where they're fighting the Absorbing Man, there's a guy running away who has an Avengers t-shirt on, which is kind of cool. And then later when it's done, you know, after they've defeated the Absorbing Man, there's people standing around taking pictures with their phones. You know, you just hear the little kick on it, on each one. But the art, like I said, and like Tony said, go pick it up. I mean, the expressions are beautiful. What Dexter Soy does with the eyes and it is beyond anything I've seen in a long time. I've instantly become a fan of his. Kelly Sue DeConnick, beautiful job on the dialogue on this issue. It was very natural. The characters, they all showed realistic levels of emotion. It didn't seem forced. It didn't seem contrived. It felt to me like a natural conversation happening between two people in a real world, even though it's not a realistic, you know, situation. So basically, I mean, for me, this book is hands down a 10 out of 10. You know, it's you really should go pick it up. Grab it now. I'm hoping, too, that this turns into a good long-running series for multiple reasons, besides the fact that this is a fantastic issue. But also, we've talked here over the last couple weeks that, finally, Marvel has at least one title now of a female lead character. So,
and not only that, but they've brought back Captain Marvel not being Mar-Vell, so he can rest in peace.
Yeah. And finally, it's nice to see somebody actually staying dead. The art is great. Oh, one other thing, too, on here that I want to point out, and I've never talked about this when doing a review, whether it's something written or here on the podcast, I actually need to point out the lettering on this book. And it's not something I would normally look at, because normally the only time you notice it is when it's done poorly. You know, then you're like, oh, I couldn't follow the word balloons, whatever it may be. This here was fantastic, especially the last few pages. Now, the letters on this were done by Joe Caramagna, which, Joe, I hopefully, if you're listening to this, I did say your name right. The last couple pages, there's almost a voiceover that goes on in here, and it's this beautiful script style that just flows back behind everything, and it just added so much more to the story than having it in a box or in a balloon of its own or set off to the side, that I really, for the first time, appreciated truly what that can and can't do, where it actually added on to the beauty of everything as a whole. So, like I said, it's a 10 out of 10. Go buy this book. Don't hesitate. I'm expecting that this book is going to take off just based on, you know, the pure talent that Dexter Soy and Kelly Sue DeConnick have of putting together a great story. So, Tony, what do you got for off the shelf this week?
Well, I have off the shelf for the last couple weeks.
you tend to do that, though, where you read things in chunks.
Yes, I have so many things to read or just not enough time to read that I will then sit down and finally read them in a row. I'm going to be discussing three books that the storyline ties together, and it just flows, and that's Uncanny X-Men number 14, number 15, and number 16. They're all written by Kieran Gillen. Artist on number 14 was Dustin Weaver, and then Daniel Acuna did both 15 and 16.
And letters once again by Joe Caramagna. I swear to God, once I started paying attention to that, he does lettering on I don't know how many books. I think that dude might be the hardest working guy in comics.
I want to first start off too with the cover of number 14, which was done by Stuart Immonen and Jim Charalampidis.
Well, there's Immonen and I don't know, Charalampidis, I believe, is the pronunciation, but yeah.
Yes.
I could be wrong on that one, but
But I just love it. Once again, whenever they do Shakespearean look, it's pretty sweet. And just the whole overall, once you get into the book and the depths of sinister London, just the art in the entire thing. But it first sticks out in your mind is the cover art.
Who did the art in that issue again, Tony?
This one, Dustin Weaver.
Okay, yeah. That art, I remember, just struck me as amazing. Yeah.
Oh, just the style, the steampunk-like atmosphere. And overall, the reason why I really want to talk about this, Sinister is one of my favorite of all bad guys. Love him, I love Apocalypse, and I love Thanos. And Sinister is just a badass, man. He's Sinister incarnate.
Yeah, and I used to always think that Sinister really wasn't that much of a badass. I'm starting to gain more appreciation for him.
Oh, very much so. Like, he, like in this, it describes the Homo Sinister, where always mutants are Homo Superior, and he's saying he's got his own branch of, you know...
He's got his own brand.
Yes, pretty much so. But just even him explaining to the reporter Sinister this whole world that you find out later is under Anchorage, Alaska, or close to it, in an old Moloid city. This beautiful town that looks like a London-esque, you know, olden days.
And also right below where Scott Summers grew up, which is, you know, that whole Sinister being just obsessed with Jean Grey and Scott Summers has always been, you know, a crazy fun story.
But just him talking about what the society is, how it functions, to bring the reader to know kind of in the mind of who he is and how unstoppable he is. He's already said if he dies in the creation engines, there will be another Sinister Prime.
Which to me, it's a cool idea, but at the same time, if there is one Sinister, you know, and the rest of them, because he kind of gets into it later that he creates a Sinister that wants to, you know, test everything, you know, that wants to, that it's a pre-planned mistake. So if he can pre-plan the mistakes, then why doesn't, and maybe this goes to the whole, you know, omnipotence of whether or not he really is what he says he is, but, you know, once he's dead, if they all have the capability of being Sinister, then why are they not all Sinister?
Because there'd be a Sinister Prime that would be recreated from the engines. As they said, the engines, which are the creation engines, I believe Celestial Technology. Mm-hmm. He already used the Sleeping Celestial that was in San Francisco to power these things.
That was a nice tie-in, by the way, I thought. You know, because you're wondering, why is that here? You know, did they just not know what to do with it and they created the story? Or did they put that there knowing that they wanted to bring Sinister in later? I don't know, but it's... very well done, at least using what was there. So,
but just in with him, he's a very smart, methodical geneticist that kind of, like, as you said, he's obsessed with the Jean Grey and the Cyclops, Scott Summers, you know, genome, because he's trying to make that create perfect being. Right now, it seems like he's a little more badass to he's the perfect being, but he's still trying to get his society to function in a way to take down Scott Summers, now that he's one of the Phoenix Five.
Yeah.
Throughout issue 14, overall, probably the best out of these three that I read, because it kind of glimpses to what he might be doing with his geneticists, such as the multiple mutants that he's recreated.
Mm-hmm.
They showed Gambit, they showed Madeline Pryor. They showed that later on,
right,
in number 16, but... Yeah. Was the other one? Oh, and Sabretooth, which,
yeah,
when you think about it, we talked a couple weeks ago about Wolverine 310 in the multiple Sabretooth vault that had many of clones.
His little test tube babies.
Is Sinister involved with that? What's his name? The big bad wolf of Sabretooth and Wolverine. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I'm not sure.
Romulus.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Is Sinister working with Romulus on a totally different thing, which is why Sabretooth came back over there? I don't know, but I would love for that to tie in, because, like I said, when Sinister is brought to the table, shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
Going into the other books, 15 was basically following the story of the Phoenix Five talking about going, finding him and going in and attacking. It also, so it starts the fight, but you also get to see a little bit of the hive mind of the Phoenix Five. You get to see them looking at the world on the outside. The art was pretty good. of them being able to communicate with themselves. Their bodies were still in Utopia, but they're already, their minds are working in multiple different ways. And that kind of follows into number 16, too, of them being able to just have this embodiment of them outside of the realm to be able to coordinate these attacks. And then, of course, at the end of number 15, they attack. Mm-hmm. 16, then, is just badass because it's fighting, and fighting with his multiple creation and clones that he did. Having all the Cyclops fire a beam through this giant cannon on top of his castle to blast Namor away. Having the many Gambits fall down on a gigantic man, Colossus, because somehow his Phoenix Force power allowed him to grow. Having the giant, the Krakoa? Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a clone of that, a living embodiment of Earth, having the castle on its back to fight them.
Which is great, you know, because now, theoretically, we could have, you know, his castle fight against the Jean Grey school.
Oh, yeah.
But the one thing that it cracks me up now, even looking at it, is all the cows with the red eyes just going to destroy.
Well, no, even the panel right before that, though, is them saying, you know, I'm going through a wheat field where they're shooting lasers at me. Like,
yeah.
This whole world is created to turn into battlements and soldiers.
Weapons and yes.
Up for this point to know that they're going to be fighting these Phoenix Five. And to kind of give away, we're not going to really touch on the book, but in the newest AVX, we also see a Phoenix Five member fall down.
Oh, we can give it away. I mean, we've already said that we'll spoil anything, you know.
That is true.
Give me some milk, I'll put
but
it outside.
That has Namor falling down. In this book as well, Sinister brought down Cyclops with the Madeline Pryors, who seemed to blow up. Where that's going to go next, if he truly lost his powers, as Namor did in the main AVX issues, don't know.
Phoenix Force would now be down to three members.
Yes, if that's true. I don't think that truly happened, because I think Sinister wants to tap that.
Well, my guess is that I don't think that actually can happen, because continuity-wise, if all these are truly worked together, Namor would have had to fall in after this battle, technically, because all five of them are here fighting. Mm-hmm. And so, at the end of this, Namor still has his power. So
as when it comes to the continuity, probably not going to see something major there, but I'm hoping that it's going to set the tone for something in the future with Scott Summers. One other thing I just wanted to say, and this goes for all the Marvel books, they started bringing back the Reader's Letters page. Those are very good to read, because people will write questions that you may never have thought of. And as the writers won't always answer those questions, they may hint at some things that you never even thought of asking.
There are actually a number of books out there. Saga is one that has a great letters page. I mean, their second issue, so the letters based on the first issue, I want to say it was like 3-4 pages long of letters. I mean, it was pretty impressive.
And I also especially like when they do the letters pages, the answering, in the form of a person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like in the character of, yeah, like the Wolverine and the X-Men, it's, you know, Kitty Pryde, or maybe Brew, or, you know, Bobby Drake, or whoever is answering the questions.
Yeah. I mean, because it makes you then even really truly care to read them, just to see the response and how it is. On the old Deadpool books, and Deadpool vs. Cable, always was in Deadpool's voice, and it was just kind of fun to pretend that character is truly writing those back.
To me, it reminds me a lot of, when they do that, depending on the characters, it reminds me a lot of the snarkiness that you would get from the old Wizard magazine in the letters, you know, column, where they'd be responding and going, well, hey, ha ha ha, funny joke here, funny joke there. Sorry, you know, I'd tell on myself that I killed too many brain cells this weekend. But yeah, so
and with this one, just to say, Sinister answers your letters, and they're quite good responses. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, one quick question for you. I mean, whose art did you prefer between the two? just a curiosity, I think they're both great. They definitely have their, each one has their own merits.
I think they're both great, but I think because of the style and what he needed to draw, Dustin Weaver was definitely, I think, the better of the two within these three books. I just think that because he had to draw a lot more of this sinister London and the people in it, that he had more better subject, but, and I truly, having to pick the two, I think he was a better
drawer. Now, for me, I like Weaver's style better. He's very detail-oriented. But I think, looking at it, Acuna, I think, does a little bit better job at portraying emotion through action than Weaver does. I would probably lean more towards Weaver, but I think Acuna does a better job on the panel layouts. That's just me, you know. So, but they're both awesome. They really are. Yeah. I'm very happy with this book that there hasn't been an artist I've disliked yet since they rebooted with number one. Mm-hmm. So,
but, well, what else do you got for us?
Well, sticking on the whole Avengers versus X-Men, I have the Versus book, or the AVX, however you want to call it, number four. Picked up the one with the variant fight cover edition, which I've picked up all those so far. They just crack me up. You know, you've got Thor versus Emma Frost, and it's Rainstorm versus Brainstorm. You know, and then, plus, can Daredevil out ninja Psylocke? It reminds me of you know, the old school boxing matches, and even, you know, some wrestling, you know, going on. All the other ones that they've had, too, you know, have been very fun. But,
well, I want to first say, before you get into this, I know that we had talked about, before even knowing this, we had talked about, because two of your favorite characters, Daredevil and Psylocke.
The hands down. And we talked about, yes,
if they would possibly fight and who you thought would win. And you were like, I can't pick a winner. I don't know how it would go and this and that. And when I picked up this book too, the first thing I thought in my head was, gotta call Derek. Hopefully he's picked this up. Oh, and he's going to be pissed. Either way, whoever wins and loses, you're going to be pissed that one lost and one won. But let's get into the story, and yeah, you say...
So the Daredevil versus Psylocke portion, written by Rick Remender, art by Brandon Peterson. Once again, Joe Caramagna doing the letters. So, Joe, I think I'm paying your rent now at this point with all the books that I buy that you work on. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous art. I mean, it is such... a perfect, and honestly, I think it's more of a Daredevil style art than a Psylocke style art.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. That's the kind of art that I've always been drawn to. Just amazing here. Rick Remender, honestly, the guy can't do any wrong when it comes to writing in my mind. So I think it was really nice. But you basically have two ninjas who have both been trained by the hand fighting each other. You know, where... you've got a little bit added bonus on Daredevil's side is he's got the radar, where you've got the added bonus on Betsy Braddock's side is, you know...
she has eyes.
Well, yeah. Uh-oh. Is it time to go get into our Morphin Power Ranger suits? But it's a fantastic, you know, just fight. If you guys haven't picked up any of these books, let me just give you a quick heads up on this. This is an add-on book to the Avengers vs. X-Men series, which you don't need to read this part to understand what's going on in that, and vice versa. If you don't care about the story and you just want to see some cool fights, this is a great book to pick up. I mean, these are just really fun. In fact, they've actually got a Q&A section on the very first page talking about, hey, what is this? And basically, you know, the first question, hey, what's this comic? And they're like, four issues in, you haven't gotten this yet? It's great. They're like, this is Versus number four of the comic series that's all about the Avengers and the X-Men punching each other's faces until one of them cries uncle. That's it. There is no more. You don't have to be deep into this. You can just enjoy artwork for the sake of artwork and fun.
Fights for the thrill of fights.
It is truly for the thrill. So, all around, great fight. It was kind of interesting to see that when Psylocke tried to dive into Daredevil's mind that it just about took her out because she'd never experienced his radar and enhanced senses.
And that was something that I remember me and Matt had said, giving him the edge when we were talking about who...
yeah.
And didn't think they were going to go that way.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised because I'm like, I'd never really thought of putting those in there. But, you know, she does pull the psychic knife on him at one point here in the fight. And the part that just made me the happiest, for the first time ever, when it comes to one of these fights, it was a draw. I'm like, yes, I win!
And luckily, listeners, just to let you in on a secret, we have Marvel's phone number. me and Matt, we called that in for Derek. We're like, we can't break his heart.
Tony might have sent us some email, or Kevin might have sent us some emails.
Yep, be like, Marvel, you just need to let it have a draw, and it made Derek happy.
Yeah, and I tell you what, now one of the things, I mean, as I've said before, I like to collect the original art. I'm going to have to track down some of the pages out of this one, because I'm just going to have to. I mean, there's just, you have my two absolute top favorite characters fighting each other on the same page together. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that.
Now I feel like you didn't even read the rest of the book.
I did. I just may have read this portion a few times. The second half of the story on here is Thor versus Emma Storm. This was Carr Andrews did the writing and the art. Once again, Joe C. does the letters on this. And this was a fun fight. I didn't really think it was very fair with Emma having the Phoenix Force.
See, though, I don't think it would have been fair if she didn't have the Phoenix Force.
Right.
One's a god, one's not. So I think giving power levels, yes, the Phoenix Force is going to kick anything's ass. But it was interesting to be able to see how far that power can go split up between five people into one.
I was a little surprised, because when he shattered her, what, you know, she was in her diamond form, and he shatters her with his hammer, I'm like, and I actually thought for a minute, and then I had to go, oh wait, this book won't have any effect on the outcome of that. So I actually thought for a minute, oh crap, she might be done. But ultimately, Emma Frost wins.
Well, I think though, ultimately too, like I said, it gives the reader a sense of how powerful one individual of the Phoenix Five is. It can take down Thor.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, because, I mean, at the end, he just does get whooped. I mean, he got whooped hard.
And they haven't shown them just fight one individual person, and I doubt that they're going to have any more in the AVX, you know, fighting books, just because, well, it's going to be Phoenix Five is going to win.
Yep. So, you know, that's these are fun books. Like I said, I mean, if you're not that interested, you know, in what's going on in the storyline, but you've always been interested in, hey, what if these two went up against each other? Go pick them up. I mean, it's worth a couple bucks, and, you know, you get exposed, actually, to a lot of different artists and writers, too.
And the fun facts.
The fun facts are kind of, you know, at first I thought they were a little cheesy in issue one, and then I was like, about partway through, I went, these aren't bad. You know, I kind of like seeing a little bit of these. So, I'd recommend it. You know, I'd give it a 4 out of 5 overall, you know, just as the general series. That issue in particular, it's a 6 out of 5 because it's got my two favorites fighting. So you do your own math. I've got mine. Next up on Off the Shelf is Space Punisher.
Groan.
Number 1 of 4. This book came out last week, and actually so did AVX number 4. We're kind of jumping back and forth a little bit here because of our week off last week. But Space Punisher, number 1 of 4, limited series, written by Frank Thierry, art by Mark Teixeira. This is a very crazy book. I picked it up because I kind of expected it to be humorous, almost like Starship Troopers kind of bad. And it kind of is, but it's intentionally that way. I mean, there's some great things.
Before you even get into it, because I haven't read it, the problem that I have with Punisher in Space is it's taking space and it's putting Punisher in it.
Yeah.
I mean, besides that, Punisher is there to punish, and he's going after the people that killed his family.
Right.
Who the hell in space killed his family?
Well, in space, hold on. See, now, this is not the same Punisher.
Oh, okay.
This is, and what this is, and why I enjoyed it, is that this is kind of like an Elseworlds, or a What If.
Okay.
Which is cool, because there's a lot of Easter eggs in here. like just with different characters. I showed you earlier, there's a lot of references to Star Wars. You know, obviously there's a reference to the Alien movies when the first line in the, on the first page is in space, no one can hear you die, which, you know, but he goes to a bar out in space, called Star Jammers or the Star Jammer, which you end up finding Corsair is the main guy there who is in the midst of a crazy
alien orgy.
I mean, there's like half man, half horse. There's full horse. There's like a chick with 10 boobs. There's a mermaid, you know, there's a chick with a tail, you know, I mean, it's, oh, there's a rooster, you know, so, you know, and his comment is, was, well, that was interesting. You know? it's nuts, but you get into the bar and it's very much a Mos Eisley, you know, reference from the original Star Wars movie. But you got Thanos hanging out in the bar, sitting on a bar stool at the end of the bar, just checking people out. You know, there's a guy that clearly, at least to me, looks like Boba Fett hiding in the background. You know, fun little Easter eggs. I mean, I spent a lot of time just cruising through the pages. But to see some different takes on characters like the Rhino, where he actually has true horns coming out of his head, and he has, you know, rhinoceros-type feet, which is a little bit closer to the Elephant Men series, if you've seen that, you know, I'd kind of say more along that lines. But then in the end, when he finds out, you know, who the six-figured hand are, these people, he kills the Sim-brood Ant Queen at the beginning. Dr. Octopus actually has octopus tentacles for legs. The Goblin, or the Green Goblin, is a goblin. Magneto's in here, the Red Skull, and Ultron are the people that he's going after. So, it's fun, it's cool, it's different. This is not going to be a comic book for everybody, but I'm definitely picking up at least the next issue. We'll see how it goes if I pick up any more from there. And honestly, I mean, Punisher kind of looks a little bit like Steven Seagal, too. So.
I mean, there goes our pick for the next Punisher movie.
Yeah, Steven Seagal, you know. But anyway, so that's that one for me. Now we are going to move on to our segment that we call Booze in a Book. This week I picked up Daredevil and Batman, a one-shot from Marvel and DC, published in 1997. Story on this one was by D.G. Chichester, art by Scott McDaniel and Derek Fisher. And this is a world where New York City and Gotham basically exist together. Daredevil and Batman team up against Mr. Hyde and Two-Face, which is kind of, Tony, I'd say a pretty cool little team-up on the villains, if you think about Mr. Hyde, who has his split personality of, you know, Dr. Jekyll, but then obviously you have the Two-Face thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's actually a pretty good one. I found this in the dollar bin, and I didn't even know it existed up until the time I saw it. So, in this book, if you're going to pick this one up, I would recommend pairing this with some lemonade and some pearl cucumber vodka, because just like the book, it is a really great team-up, quenches your thirst, leaves you satisfied, and unless somebody told you about the book or that drink, you'd probably never know about either one of them. So from there, we are moving on to the Indy Turnpike. Tony, did you have a chance, did I get a chance to show you the new Crow that came out?
You were talking about it, but no, I did not know they were making a new Crow, well, nor why would they?
Well, that's one of the things, and this book I wanted to talk about for multiple reasons. For you listeners out there, I have had a love affair with the original Crow comic since I first found it, you know, back in the 90s. Found it before the movie came out, but it wasn't brand new at that point either. The original movie, absolute love, you know, they're talking about rebooting that one again. I don't know how far they've gotten into it. Every time I turn around, there's a new director or somebody new writing it. But the book, every time one comes out, I typically go and look. And this one is called The Crow, Death and Rebirth. And this was written by John Shirley. Art was by Kevin Colden. Colors were done by Matthew Wilson on this one, and letters by Sean Lee. This book, one of the things that whenever it comes to the Crow, this book is done in color, and I'm not sure why they don't go back to the black and white. And this is not to discount the colors by Matthew Wilson, because honestly, I think what he did here really does add a lot of emotion to it, but I would rather see these stories done in a black and white.
I think, though, too, though, if they're doing, you know, a retelling of it, they got to do it a little bit different.
Well, they aren't retelling. This is a completely separate story. This is not the original characters. It's not any of that.
But if it's going to be, though, a new reader getting on board with the book, I understand what you're saying, but that was the first Crow, black and white, and that I wouldn't really care to see them make that color.
But you can't.
But they're doing a different book, differentiate from this being Crow number one now to Crow number one back in the day. Color is a big difference.
Yeah, but then again, you know, when the biggest book this last week that came out was Walking Dead number 100, and it was the biggest selling individual book since, 1997? As far as individual issue in a first print, that book's in black and white. You can do it.
That's true.
You can do it. But, you know, I mean, like I said, I mean, Wilson does a really beautiful job with his work. I just, when I think of The Crow, I think of black and white, even though it's a new story. In general, there is good character development in here, and I did see some real emotion written into the characters. Add in that this story takes place in Japan and the mysticisms of what, you know, the religions are there. Overall, this is probably the best idea I've seen for a quote-unquote reboot of the idea of The Crow since the original. The book is good, you know, but as you're looking at me, sitting here going, you're saying it's good, but you don't sound like you think it's good. I'm really drawn back to the original, and I don't know why they keep coming back with more ideas. I think
they should. I mean, the original was so good in itself, but there are readers that want to know more of the mythos, more of The Crow, and that's why they need to come back to it, because there is kind of some demand. There's people that say let it die, let it rest.
Yeah,
but there are others like me that would be intrigued to find out more of what is this Crow, or what is the power. Kind of like there's the multiple phantoms. Mm-hmm. If you've ever read any of those series, there's multiple different phantoms, and that mythos of it carries on with each new character. So if there's a new Crow character, the mythos is what the new story is, not just the character of the Crow.
Well, you know, and I'll admit, I'm probably just being too close-minded because I'm too, you know, have too much of that love affair with the original. But I'm going to give this one a try. I did like the first issue. I just have to separate from the original. For people that aren't familiar with the story, I think this would be a great book. I think it'd be a good read for a lot of people. The art, pretty decent. It's not my normal style of art, but I think it works really well. The layouts in general are done very nicely, and the shading is quite nice. There are a couple pages that I really did just sit back and go, boy, that looks awesome. The last page in particular, I'm like, I like that one a lot. So anyway, that's it for me on the Indie Turnpike this week. So, Tony, were there any other books that you wanted to talk about this week, or are we pretty good on what you've been able to read? I know you had a lot of other stuff going on outside of your comic books this week.
No, I'm pretty good. I know this week I'll have a lot more time to be catching up and definitely have a lot more to discuss next weekend.
Okay. We do have a couple little points of business to take out. Got a few shout-outs that we wanted to do. The first one on here is, wanted to say a thank you to Jason Westlake, who has helped us both in creating our original logo, but is also letting us use his artwork behind our name on our website. So if you're wondering who did those awesome Avengers pictures that are up there, go check them out, which leads me into the next thing. Go to our Artist Alley. Check out the artists that we have up there. We're going to be adding a few more here this weekend. Right now, besides Jason Westlake, we've also got Jay Shimko, another great friend of the show. He does some awesome stuff. Both of those guys are fantastic with the sketch cards. And I know, I believe Jay is working on them as well, but I know that Jason is working on some new Transformers sketch cards that are going to be tied in with the new movie. He just put a new thing up on his blog about it. Also, another friend of the show, Francesco, fantastic artist. Check his stuff out. A couple new people that we added here recently, Nick Francis and Chris Dixon, a couple guys that are looking to break into the industry right now, and they both have some really good stuff. So go take a peek and see what they've got. Any of you that are artists or know any artists that would like to be linked to our website, please get in contact with us, drunkoncomics@gmail.com. There should be a contact page up on our website now. You can find us on Twitter, @drunkoncomics. Find us on Facebook. We'd love to help, you know, just promote the industry as a whole. One other thing here, we did have 2 weeks ago when we did our normal weekly program, we had our collecting tip, which was what, Tony?
Make sure you shower before going to a con.
Yeah, so apparently not that many people either listened to us or took the advice, one of the two. And so, sorry, San Diego, we tried, but I've already seen at least two articles referring to the odor and the con funk. So, nerds, we love you. We are nerds as well. Please, wash your stinky asses. So, that's pretty much, I think, going to do it for us, unless there was anything else that you had on here for today, Tony?
Nope, that about does it for me.
Okay. Well, again, find us on Twitter, Facebook, send us some email. We'd love to hear some feedback. We are going to hopefully be going to some upcoming conventions. We will give you that information when it's been finalized. But for right now, I think that's going to do it. So say goodbye, Tony.
Adios.
All right. My name's Derek. On behalf of all of us here at Drunk on Comics, keep reading your comics, and we'll see you again next week. Later.